Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. On such a beautiful summer day, our solar panels are working. Our new minister and his wife are here. My name is Greg Sand, and I'm this morning's board rep from the church board. We have a variety of announcements in the order of service. A couple extra ones here to reach you now. Please feel free to take the order of service home when you go. The monthly food pantry collection is today. Sponsored by the Social Action Committee, this month's collection is for the Sussex Food Pantry. Monetary donations will be collected during the offertory. Loose cash donations will go to the food pantry. Checks can be then made out to LCUC with the amounts for the food pantry and for LUCC noted on the memo line or check envelope. Food contributions can be placed in the baskets in the foyer labeled food pantry. Also from the Marines, we have leftover gazpacho soup and tabbouleh, which will be for us to consume in the social hall after the service. Enjoy. I invite you to greet those around you. Universalism and help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church or if you have been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member. I would also be happy to talk to you about any aspect of our church and our church life. If you're visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they can go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you'd like to go along to observe the child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors on my right and across the entryway. And if there's any need for younger kid child care during the service, our classes will end right at 11:15, so please pick up your children right then. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you'd introduce them, or if any guests have brought themselves and you feel comfortable introducing themselves. This is a great time to do that.
I'm Connie. Welcome to you all.
Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after our service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. Hope you find this morning's service fulfilling. Our speaker today is Nan Hoare. As I mentioned, we have Jim and Nan today. I will read a bio on both of them. First of all, from Jim, James A. Hobart comes from the multi-generational Unitarian family. He grew up in the South, where his father served a UU congregation in New Orleans, Charleston, and Birmingham. Jim graduated from Meadville Lombard Theological School in 1964. He has served in ministries in New England, Pennsylvania, and the Midwest. Hobart's lived in Denver from 1983 to 2001. For the first 8 years, he was the minister of Denver's First Unitarian Society. And for the next 10 years, he and Nan served as co-ministers of the congregation. Since 2001, Hobart's have resided in Chicago's Hyde Park. He has served several interim ministries. In addition, he was an adjunct and affiliated faculty member at Meadville Lombard. The Hobarts are parents of a blended family of 5 children and grandparents of 7-year-old Ezekiel and 2-year-old Lucille. Nan Hobart was a minister of Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Boulder for 7 years and co-minister with Jim at the First Unitarian of Denver, for 10 years. She was also chaplain at Meadville Lombard for 8 years. And since leaving Meadville in 2009, she has been caring for her 97-year-old mother, her 2-year-old granddaughter, and, of course, Jim. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's great to be with you, and I look forward to this year and the opportunity to put names to your faces. I've already done that with a few people. So I think we're going to have a really good year together, and I'm looking forward to it. We come together to give shape and form to religious community. A religious community founded to support and to protect the precious inheritance and the sacred right of religious freedom for all peoples. The integrity of each conscience and mind and heart. A religion based in right relationships more than right beliefs. We come together to honor the past generations who supported the being and promoted the well-being of this liberal religious community. We come together determined that our religious community will serve and prosper in our time. And we come together confident that our religious community is a secure inheritance for the generations yet to come. It is now time for the lighting of our chalice.
Please join in singing the words that are printed in the order of service for the chalice lighting.
Children would want to come forward at this time. They're certainly invited to, or adults for that matter, or I can just stand here by myself. Actually, I'm going to sit down. Okay, is there anybody here who's 6 years old? Nobody 6 years old. Well, I'm going to tell you a story in just a moment about a little girl whose name is Ruby Bridges. It's a true story, the story of Ruby Bridges, who was 6 years old. So I'm sure anybody here who's never been 6 years old, Not down here in front. I can tell all of you are 6 years old, more than 6 years old. So this is the story of Ruby Bridges. Many, many years ago, so long ago that your grandparents were children, African-American children in many places in this country were not allowed to go to school with white children. Finally, a judge ruled in court that it was illegal to treat African-American children different from white children. Well, Ruby Bridges was an African-American girl. She lived in New Orleans in those days. And when she was old enough to start school, the judge said she should go to the white school near her house, even though the white families didn't want her to go there. Her parents believed it was important for people to stand up for what they believed. So they agreed that Ruby should go to what had been the white school. Ruby's parents taught her that it was important to hold her head high and to be proud of who she was, and that's exactly what she did. On her first day at Franz Elementary School, she walked to school, and she had with her two federal marshals to protect her. What would Ruby need protection from?
Well, there were angry mobs of people along the sidewalks and the streets. And Ruby faced several angry people who were screaming and yelling, "Blacks don't belong in our schools." As Ruby approached the Franz Elementary School, the mobs got larger and got worse. It was a good thing Ruby had federal marshals to protect her, because several of the people in the mob looked angry enough that they might hurt her. When she arrived safely inside the school building, she saw that she was the only child there. In fact, the only other person inside her room was her teacher. The white children's parents didn't want them to attend school with Ruby. So while Ruby was learning how to read and write, all of the other children stayed at home. Each day, Ruby had to face angry mobs as she walked to and from school. The days turned into weeks, and the weeks turned into months, and still Ruby was the only child in the Franz Elementary School receiving an education. One day, as Ruby was walking to school, she stopped in the middle of the angry mob and she began to talk to them. This made the mob go crazy and they began yelling even louder. The federal marshals got scared for her at what the mob might do, and they urged Ruby to continue walking. And when she got to school, her teacher asked her why she had stopped to talk to these angry people. Ruby corrected her teacher by telling her that she wasn't talking to the people, she was talking to God. Every day as she walked to and from school, she would repeat this prayer: "Please, God, try to forgive these people, because even if they say these bad things, they don't know what they're doing." Later that same year, Ruby was joined by two white children at the Franz Elementary School. As each day passed and more children returned to school, the mob quit their protests. It was obvious that Ruby was not going to let the angry mob intimidate her. Ruby finished her first year at Franz Elementary School, and she later went on to graduate from high school. So that's our story for the morning. Think about that and what it must have been like for her to go to school under those circumstances. And think about those two white children who finally decided to go to school with her, how brave they were too. I think it's really quite a remarkable story. Well, now it's time for the children to go to religious education, and we will all rise in body and in spirit and sing together hymn number 126, "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing."
Thank you. church service. Now it's a sacred time when we invite all to share great joys or profound sorrows with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand. When the usher brings you a microphone, please briefly tell us your name and the concern or joy you wish to share. I will light a candle to represent your joy or concern. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys multiply. First, I will light the memorial candle to acknowledge the many conflicts in our world. May a peaceful resolution be found to them.
My name is Kathy, and I have a great joy in welcoming Jim and Nan to our congregation today, and we look forward to the upcoming year.
Hi, I'm Greg. If you could light a candle of concern for our good friend, our 9-year-old Canadian friend, our neighbor at the cabin up there, is having to have a triple bypass surgery later this month, and hoping for a speedy recovery. Secondly, I guess a joy initially because of all the outreach from all you guys helping Kristen and I with our family needs so far with her torn Achilles. and it's her right foot, so thanks for the offer to drive. It really does help. And a concern for a speedy recovery for Kristen.
I'm Teresa. I have a joy that in 12 days I'm leaving for Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin for a semester at Conserve School, an environmental boarding school, and I'm really excited, but I'm going to miss all you guys and all my friends. So.
I'm Jerry. I have two candles of joy. First is for our son Alex, who is visiting us here from Germany. He and his wife and their daughter live near Stuttgart, and he's been in the U.S. for the past week visiting us and also visiting his rowing teammates at Wisconsin who are having a reunion in Madison. The second great candle of joy is for our church. As already mentioned, our solar installation is all up and running. The switch was thrown on Thursday. Kathy signed the paperwork. We Energies finally got here on Friday and turned on the electric meter. So we're up and running and generating electricity. And I just wanted to mention that September 24th, put that on your mental calendar right now. We want to have a big celebration for that solar installation, have a big ceremony and a big party here at the church. So put that on your calendar.
My name's Lynn. A couple candles of joy. Number one for the 21 LCUCers who went to Kentucky and with the Appalachia Service Project and worked in the 100 degree heat and did some incredible work, and apparently everyone did really, really well, happy and healthy and safe. So we look forward to hearing from them sometime this year. And also just a joy that I have all three children here. My daughter May is home from a year-long journey. She inspired our church to start the Safe Passage project here. So anyway, thank you.
My name's Scott. I just came back from my 5-week trips to visiting all over the places. And last visit was in Sweden, visited with Jane. And I want you to let you know that she is most happy over there. Her neighbors, the people, the country, just warm, wonderful place. If I could speak Swedish, I'll move there, but I can't. So reading from her, and she's happy as she can be over there.
My name is Yvonne, and I'd like to light a candle for a former member, Tracy Langan, who has some huge health concerns, and one of them is a very large tumor in her abdomen, and she's having surgery tomorrow. And so if you'd all send healing thoughts and good wishes to her.
My name is Jennifer. Tom.
I'd like you to light a candle of joy for my my cousin's son, who was married yesterday. So this is for Alex Westfall and John Young, and who everybody calls Rose. And this is the first wedding from among all the children of my cousins, and it's sort of a warm-up in the family for my son's wedding.
I will light one final candle for all the joys and concerns we hold in our hearts. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. The offering will now be received.
Decisions and our common choices to serve together. We seek in our time and in this place to create and to maintain a beloved community. Our care embraces one another as well as people near and far. Our concern encompasses our earth home and all its inhabitants. We seek to be a people of wide and deep vision. We strive to be companions drawn together by a broad purpose. We intend to be a community responsive to an insistent and compelling call, responding in service through ways of appreciation and gratitude, beauty and justice, compassion and peace. We acknowledge now that our practice does not always meet this high measure. We are aware how far we fall short of these productive ways of living. Today, we renew our pledges. Our mutual promises forge our common bonds. We make our promises to one another. We affirm our promises to all humankind. We give voice to our promises to serve the foundation on which all rests and the source from which all flows. We seek to be faithful in all these ways. This is our solemn promise and our joyful covenant. And now let us each continue in the spirit of silent meditation. Rise in body or in spirit and join together in hymn number 111, Life of Ages. reading from James Baldwin. It is a mighty heritage. It is the human heritage. And it is all there is to trust. I learned this through descending, as it were, into the eyes of my father and my mother. I wondered when I was little how they bore it, for I knew that they had much to bear. It had not yet occurred to me that I also would have much to bear, but they knew it, and the unimaginable rigors of their journey helped them to prepare me for mine. This is why one must say yes to life and embrace it wherever it is found. And it is found in terrible places. Nevertheless, there it is. And if the father can say, "Yes, Lord," the child can also learn that most difficult of words, "Amen." For nothing is fixed forever and forever and forever. The earth is always shifting. The light is always changing. The sea does not cease to grind down rock. Generations do not cease to be born. And we are responsible to them because we are the only witnesses they have. The sea rises, the light fails, lovers cling to each other, and children cling to us. The moment we cease to hold each other, the moment we break faith with one another, the sea engulfs us and the light goes out.
I thank you all so much for the kind welcome that Jim and I have received, for being understanding that a week ago we thought it might be a good idea to conserve his strength after his health adventure, although he seems to be doing quite well. I'm expecting by the end of next week that I'll be living with the Energizer Bunny. But it gives me a special opportunity to be able to come to know you right away at the beginning of this year in such a wonderful way. I'm very happy to be with you. Jim said one thing about this congregation as he was in conversation about the possibility of coming here. And he kept saying over and over again, "I really like those people." I'm beginning to understand why he said that. When did you become a liberal? Perhaps you were born into a liberal family and have never known any other way. Unless at some point you rebelled against your parents' liberalism and experimented with conservatism, as my Southside-raised son and his friends did during most of their sophomore year in high school, or perhaps you pushed their stodgy liberal limits with journeys into new radical frontiers. And being liberal parents, they were mostly patient with you. Many, if not the majority of us here, probably come from families and religious cultures that are conservative, traditional, maybe even reactionary. I was raised in an environment where steadiness was the religious and political style. Don't ask too many questions. Follow the leader. He knows what is good for you. For me, it never really took. As I look back, I sense that my self-awareness of being politically and religiously different came somewhere near my ninth year. That was the year I read my first Unitarian theologian, and that was the year my family bought their first television set. In February, I received a copy of Little Women for my birthday, and immediately I found myself opened to Louisa May Alcott's vision of human dignity and kindness and responsibility for the well-being of others. These were ideas and values that were taught to children in my mainline church, but in the narrow-minded and culture-bound reality of that congregation and those times, there was no real evidence that they were lived. I knew nothing of Unitarianism when I was nine, but a Unitarian woman of the 19th century made me a religious liberal. And during that summer, the television was delivered, an occasion of note in the life of any American family in 1952. My brother and I watched all we could, test patterns when nothing was being broadcast. Then the Republican and Democratic conventions came on the air. All day and well into the night, we were mesmerized. We watched the broadcasts of earnest speeches. We heard talk of caucuses and platforms. We experienced the drama of nominations and balloting. When the conventions ended, we made our choice. Unlike our parents, who were convinced that only General Eisenhower could keep us safe from the encroaching communist hordes, Jack and I heard something in the words and the attitudes of Adlai Stevenson and his supporters, something that spoke to our emerging sense of citizenship and responsibility. Who knows what we heard, but we've never turned back. How did you become a liberal? Now, you may feel I'm being arrogant, assuming that everyone here is liberal, a religious liberal, and more than likely a political liberal. I apologize for my arrogance, but I do believe that liberalism is a common ground of our diverse and multifaceted faith. Our religious stories and practices may have many sources: Christian, pagan, atheist, Buddhist, much more. Our political activism may take many forms: progressive, radical, democratic, or Republican. But if you are here as a Unitarian Universalist, I believe that your faith and your worldview are built on the ethic and integrity of liberalism. Now, I will admit that for the past decade or two, liberal has become a dirty word. When was the last time you heard a public figure refer to his or her political convictions as liberal? Even those who might reasonably have earned the name have been leery of being labeled with what has become a derisive epithet, a political liability. Liberal, tax and spend, bleeding heart, hedonistic, unpatriotic, weak, immoral, anti-family, irrelevant, unprincipled. Liberal, like us, Unitarian Universalists, who claim a faith that speaks for the worth and dignity of every person. A faith that uses words like justice, equity, compassion, that asserts the search for truth and meaning. Liberals, like us, the inheritors of dynamic religious and liberal religious and political ideas. Ideas that moved through the Enlightenment and the Reformation through the expansion of the American colonies, the inheritors of liberating notions about human nature, about a revolutionary new form of government, and about the development of the free church. These were movements driven by liberal principles that honored the potential and the responsibility of humans living together and creating communities and nations. Movements that drew energy from the tension between individual freedom and the common good. Here are some real adjectives that belong with liberal. Words from the dictionary, not from talk radio. Generous, tolerant, reforming, abundant, open-minded, progressive. These are the qualities that inform the liberal vision of government, a vision that understands that change and diversity are strength and renewal. A vision founded on an expectation of informed deliberation and persuasion, of compromise and correction. A vision of government inviting political discourse, public thinking, public reasoning. A vision of government focused on the public good and built on public trust. This is the democracy I was promised when I studied civics in grammar school. This was the vision of democracy that called me to responsible citizenship. Political philosopher Joseph Tussman writes this: democratic political life turns upon the office of the citizen and upon the demands of that office. The citizen is, in his political capacity, a public agent with all that implies. He is asked public, not private questions. Do we need more public schools? Not would you like to pay more taxes? She must, in this capacity, be concerned with the public interest, not with her private goods. Her communication must be collegial, not manipulative. She must deliberate, not bargain. There is a difference between what we happen to want and what is good for all of us. Has there ever, in your memory, been a year of such political wretchedness? Not in my memory, and I'm old enough to remember some appalling years. As the months have passed, mean-spiritedness has turned to viciousness. Self-interest has risen to new levels of blind arrogance. And, well, an awful lot of powerful people seem to have forgotten how to act like grown-ups. I can't say I've been overcome with patriotic fervor. I have, however, come close to being overcome with despair. Something very precious is in danger of being lost, something that rests at the heart of the contract of American democracy, the belief that we are all engaged in the responsibility to promote and maintain the common good. I'm not such a romantic that I believe that there was some golden American age when that ideal was universally practiced. But at least in times past, we knew there was such an ideal, and we expected that our leaders, of whatever party, knew that too. I'm sure I'm not alone in feeling that today, many, many of our leaders think that their most important job is to be re-elected, and their most important constituency is made up of their financial supporters. The bigger the check, the greater the influence. As liberal religious citizens of a troubled republic, how can we keep from being overcome with despair? Is ours a faith to which we can turn to make meaning of our choices and energize our actions. Let me move then to the second leg upon which Unitarian Universalism stands. If liberalism is our philosophical foundation, our head, then humanism is our theological grounding, our heart. Now, before I go on, and this is very important, I want to make clear what I mean when I speak of humanism. I do not use the term humanism as a polite euphemism for atheist. One does not serve for the other. Lots of humanists are atheists, but even more humanists are Catholics and Methodists and Jews and every other religious classification we can make. We, who are Unitarian Universalists, who may individually know ourselves as Christians or atheists or Buddhists or Jews or pagans, hold in common a humanistic theology and worldview. In whatever religious language you or I prefer to worship or to tell our story, we share one overarching humanistic universal, and it is this. Along with the gift of life, we have been given the capacity and the responsibility for the care and the salvation of this world and all its creatures. As a religious humanist, I believe that I was born into a covenant with every woman and man and child on this earth. As a humanist, I believe that covenant means that my life is no more important than any one of theirs. As a humanist, I remind myself to live in gratitude for all the earned and unearned joys of my being. As a humanist, I wrestle continually with an overwhelming sense of the magnitude of the care and salvation for which I am responsible. As a humanist, I struggle to accept my human limitations, to learn to be satisfied with my best efforts, and to be accountable for my everyday sins of commission and omission. As a humanist, I am in a constant battle against hubris, arrogance, and pridefulness. It is a mighty heritage, this human heritage, this humanism. And as James Baldwin reminded us in the earlier reading, it is all we have to trust. It is heavy laden with dark disappointment and soaring creative triumph. How do we navigate a course between the extremes of despair and euphoria, between the extremes of shame and pride? Where in this faith will we find courage in times of turmoil? You may not like my answer. If we are to keep the covenant of a life-serving, life-saving humanism, we must learn to practice radical humility. Sometimes this is very hard for we liberal religion humanists to understand. After all, with all of the independence and creativity and talent that we claim as our birthright, with all the responsibility we have been given, aren't we pretty special? Aren't we pretty smart? And isn't the point of humility to make you feel bad about yourself and guilty and not okay? No. On the contrary, It should make us feel whole. Humility and human come from the same root. Humus, the earth. We are the common stuff of life. We share in common with all our earthly sisters and brothers basic fears and sins and joys. I find a surprising strength in that kinship when I have the patient humility to recognize and claim it. It is a moving antidote to the lure of self-absorption. It is at once empowering and comforting to be welcomed into the fellowship of the world. A world of which I am neither the focus nor the purpose. Our religion is not an element in our lives, something to do when time or need promote it. Our religion is a covenant upon our lives, the entirety of our lives, and it is a charge upon our lives to move with confidence in our wholeness, with knowledge that we are not alone, and in the conviction of life's sacredness. Our liberal, humanistic religion challenges us to engage faithfully in that world, and that includes carrying out the duties of the office of citizen. In a world fraught with pain and sorrow and terrible places, the test of our well-intentioned faith is severe. That is what I know of our religion, and this is what else I know of our religion. Our liberal humanistic religion calls for the timid to move into fearful and unknown places, to face the fear, and to say yes to life. All of us are timid sometimes, and it is up to us to help one another. Our religion calls for those obsessed with security and comfort and achievement to take stock of our choices and our values. All of us are self-centered sometimes, and it is up to us to call one another to a wider vision. Our religion calls for us to consider the worth and the authenticity and the struggle of every child and woman and man on this earth. It is up to us to stand with them and to help them. This is the hard work of our humanistic faith and the daunting task of liberal patriotism in perilous times. Will there be failure? You bet. Don't be afraid of failure. Get used to it. Practice humility. Celebrate the occasional victory. God knows you've earned it. But learn to respect failure. There is no better teacher. On the common ground of common human need, all of us are trying and falling and standing back up, learning and serving, embracing life where it is found, and standing back up. We remember James Baldwin's words, "Generations do not cease to be born, and we are responsible to them because we are the only witnesses they have. The moment we cease to hold each other, the moment we break faith with one another, the sea engulfs us and the light goes out." There will be, Baldwin reminds us, terrible places. There will also be, I remind you, joy and friends and singing. Work well done, and the deep satisfaction of belonging in this world. Have courage. open your life to the sustaining and creating power of our shared faith. Renew it in prayer and in service. Spend it, share it, savor it, and lift up your heart in thanks.
Good morning, I'm Barbara.
Good morning, Barbara.
It's the first time I've seen you and met you, Nan. Thanks for these wonderful words. I needed them. I'm one of the despairing ones right now. Thank you.
She's very liberal. Always has been. She grew up in Madison. She, that's all I have to say about that. And I rebelled for a little while, but then I came back to her side of things. I just thought that was kind of poked me, and I'm like, I remember those days when George Bush was running for office, and I was like, yeah, Bush, and my mom was like, no. And I was like, yes. And then I learned really quick that was a mistake.
But what a good way to learn.
Yes.
To have actually experienced something different and to be able to test your old assumptions against some new ones and can have a little bit of a sense of what other people really were thinking.
Right. Yeah, it definitely was fine, for sure.
Thanks, Angela.
Hi, I'm Tom.
Hi, Tom.
And one of the issues that we struggle with as a congregation here is whether we are welcoming to people who are not liberal or people who are not humanist. And I know you gave some very broad definitions of those issues. I'm just wondering how you would respond to the issue that you discussed.
I think that what I tried to say was that at the most basic level, we all are liberal, and that doesn't mean we're necessarily Democrats or Republicans, but that you know, you using the classic kind of universal sense of what liberal means, that openness, that tolerance, all you have to do is read the seven principles and anything else but Unitarian Universalism, and that's our religious way. That doesn't say that we are supposed to be politically a particular way, but our religious way is a liberal way. It's not a narrow, fundamentalist, conservative way. I'm a Christian. Others in this congregation are going to have their own religious stories, their own histories, their own ways that they prefer to do things. But I am, whatever else we want to call ourselves, that liberal way of thinking and that humanistic way of understanding what creation is all about. You know, whatever our story of creation, whoever created it or didn't or whatever our story of creation, to me, a humanist is someone who understands that our responsibility out of creation is to that creation. That there's not someone else who's going to come and do it for us. And again, I mean, I think that leaves us a whole bunch of room. So I think it's important to kind of begin to open up our definitions of things so that we can talk with people about what this really means. And clearly, there are an awful lot of people who don't want to be Unitarian Universalists. I mean, so we kind of, you know, I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that being open and welcoming means everybody's going to want to be a part of how we share our faith together, because that leaves out a lot of people who have perfectly good religions. But their religions are not liberal in the sense of that openness and tolerance and all.
My name is Greg, and I'm in the middle here, way in the back.
Hi, Dan. Did you say Greg?
Yes, Greg. You're welcome to you.
That's two Gregs.
I'm thrilled to have you guys here. By way of self-disclosure, I'll admit I'm probably left of center in most ways politically, and I'm probably way on the left theologically. That being said, I think you made a good case for the roots of our tradition being in theological liberalism and certainly in humanism. But I also want to make the case for many of my conservative friends to say that we're also all conservative. I'm a college professor by trade, and my students often come in prepared to debate. And one of the first things I want to say for them is, I think we are all liberals and we're all conservatives. If I ask them, are there things you'd like to change, ways you'd like to make progress, places where you would like more cooperation and more social government action, everybody would raise their hand. But if I said, are there things in our tradition that you think are worth conserving, things that you want to hang on to, are there places where you think we spend too much, everyone would raise their hand. So I think I want to make the case that there are people who hold liberal principles and humanistic values who see reasons to make conservative choices and to be on the right of center. So I want to say that there is liberal traditions and humanistic values can also lead people to sometimes make choices to the right of center, and in that way I think there is a place for those people here.
Absolutely.
And
certainly our liberal value of deliberation and taking other people seriously invites that. So it tells us that we do need to hear what other people are saying and take it seriously.
I'm Yvonne, and I struggle with that as well. And I read a book by Karen Armstrong, I think it was The Battle for God, where she went to define liberal and conservative. And liberal was really that things, we live in an unfolding new environment, as the reading pointed out, and conservative wants us to say things are cut in stone, this is how it is, how it always will be. And so it reflects our response to our current environment. What do we want to bring forward? I mean, I think a balanced budget is really would be a good thing. And yet, you know, we all have to make sacrifices in terms of how that would get balanced. But so I think it's it's hard for me to go to the black and white, to the conservative liberal, because I think we all want to be part of a group, and labels get so messy because we have to build walls around a label, and I think that's where part of where we get in trouble.
My name's Barb. I'm back here.
Hi,
and welcome. When you spoke of radical humility, it really touched a deep place in me, and I think that possibly radical humility may be one of the few ways out of our political and socioeconomic problems today.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mike. I struggle with everything being one or the other. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, everybody, liberal or conservative, I mean, I believe in a multifaceted view of the world. And just as Greg was saying, it's like all of us have some things we want to conserve and move on, and other things we want to progress on. But again, I worry about us getting sucked into the dichotomy of saying it's one or the other, and most people I know are actually moderates in between that want to have some of each and balance things out. So I wish we would not get stuck into this. You know, liberal is evil. And get classified, because our current political situation is I don't see any real liberals out there. There's moderates and there's conservatives or ultra conservatives, or I even call them right wingers. I don't even call them conservatives, because true conservatism is gone by the wayside. I get starved and bunch. We don't have enough time.
I think the man.
Paul wants to pull the plug here. We'll discuss that more later.
Thank you all so much. I appreciate your thoughtfulness and your willing to share that. And as we prepare to leave this warm and sacred place, let us join. I meant that metaphorically. Let's share together the words of this great, wonderful old hymn, God of Grace and God of Glory, number 113.
Thank you.
which we will work out our salvation. The challenge is in the moment. The time is always now. Go in faith. Go in courage. May you embrace the world with a generous spirit. Amen.